Hello, everyone. You have entered the battle phase. It is I, the Midnight Bard, your favorite bard, and I brought a box of chocolates. Joining me, as always, is Sacro, who spent a lot of money on a flower arrangement.
Flowers are insanely expensive. Like, the vase alone is like $25.
Yeah. No kidding. And like, you know, don't even get me started on edible arrangements. I mean, I feel like I could cut up a bunch of fruit and put it together like that. But, you know, it might be one of those grass is greener type situations where something looks a lot easier than it actually is.
I used to do flower arrangements in high school, and they were not as easy to put together as you'd think.
Nah. I that's kind of what I was worried
about. There's a whole study to it. Yeah. It's fun.
Well, welcome to the Battle Phase podcast. This is the podcast where Sacro and I read and watch anime and manga, and then we give you our opinions on it. Today, we're doing a very special episode while we catch up on some user-submitted titles. Today, we're going to be discussing, you know, because it's February, it's the month of love and romance, so we're discussing our favorite waifu characters.
Oh, I didn't put my husbandos on here either.
yes. I feel like husbandos would be like a totally different list.
Because with, you know, who do I want to sit down and eat some food with? I don't know.
I have some entries for husbando list for sure. But yeah, so you know, if you're listening to us on I don't even remember what platforms we're on anymore.
We're on YouTube. We're on Spotify.
We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Music. Yeah, so welcome. You know, we're happy to have you. Please remember to leave us a like and a comment and, you know, tell us which anime or manga you're reading, which one you would like for us to read, and we'll put it on our list. We'll eventually get around to it. That being said, how's your week been, Sacro? You've been busy, man. I hear that you started up at school again, so you've kind of been like radio silent for a while.
Yeah, so school started again. I'm taking a higher level coding class, and I'm not amazing at coding, but I'm slowly figuring it out. But yesterday, two days ago, I had an assignment due, and it took me almost three hours to make sure, because he uses an auto grader to make sure your code's correct. And that's stupid. Mm-hmm. If you capitalize something and he didn't, it says it's all wrong. And yeah, so it takes forever to correct. But yeah, coding's not fun. But otherwise, yeah, just been working. I have a 3-hour video coming out soon on my main channel, which is kind of insane for me.
Yeah, dude, like that is long form content, which I figured out a long time ago that I prefer doing like podcasting for that very reason, because it's just easier to edit than videos. But additionally, you know, like I feel like whenever I'm doing videos, I'm finding my home in TikTok, dude. Like I put up a Yu-Gi-Oh video earlier this week that is something that I've wanted to do for a long time. And it got some really good reception. I was like really pleased with the way that it turned out. People were actually asking for more in the comments of it, which was exciting.
Was that the one I saw today with like 30 something likes?
No, maybe. Was it the one where I talked about which deck, which modern deck,
which character,
the original cast?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that it got like some traction, dude. It was really exciting. And, you know, like I said, some people in the comments, everybody has their opinion on like the original cast of Yu-Gi-Oh!, which, you know, like is fine. So a lot of the times whenever I'm saying like, oh, well, in modern days, Yugi, who is known for playing like Dark Magician and stuff, would probably play something like Libramancers. Everybody's all like, no, Yugi would stick with Dark Magician, and Kaiba wouldn't play anything other than Blue Eyes. And I'm like, yeah, guys, this is a hypothetical. I mean, go with me here.
Story-wise, I mean, Yugi would make up a new Dark Magician to be meta for him. Like, oh, we're making
this
up today.
I don't think that that's a Yugi thing. That's definitely a Konami thing. You know, like they're like, hey, you know what? What if we sold more Dark Magician stuff? People love Dark Magician. It's great.
Dark Magician girls everywhere. So, yeah.
Hey, anyway, speaking about waifus. we're doing this the same way that we did our favorite anime tropes. We're doing it like top five beatdown style. We both compiled a list of five waifus who, you know, we happen to think are neat. And here's basically how I wanted to start this whole discussion. It's like, what makes a good anime waifu? You know, is it just she cute? You know, so like, are we talking about like excellent design? Are we talking about like fun personality? are we talking a mix of all of those things? Is there a thing that doesn't matter? You know, like, so for example, like, can they have like a really good design and a fun personality, but lack in the backstory department? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like me personally, I happen to think that if a character has like a really simple backstory, because not everybody needs to have like the Dungeons and Dragons traditional, like tragic backstory to be an adventurer, right? People can just have like a fun personality and a good design, and that makes him just like an excellent character. So that's kind of like what I wanted to ask you, see what your thoughts on that were.
So yeah, I mean, at least one of these in my list is because of design alone rather than personality, because yeah, I grew up with the character. But most of these are based on how I interacted with them when I was watching it, or how I interacted with playing it in one of these cases, because I played the game. But most of the time, I don't really focus. Okay, so my first thing
one
is
one of mine is from look. A game also. Yeah.
I think the look. Yeah, it's the look. If the look is there, then it gets me interested. But if their personality sucks or their story doesn't matter in any way, shape, or form, I'll forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be something connecting to them.
And that's true. That's true, too. You know, like, and there's something to be said about, like, the design being, like, the catching factor, right? Like, we discussed Nue's Exorcist on our previous episode, right? During our Halloween episode where we read Exorcist titles.
Correct.
And which, by the way, I'm fully caught up on Ultimate Exorcist Kyoshi, and that manga is so much fun, dude.
Like, yeah, I've been seeing your screenshots in the chat.
Every chapter is comedy gold. It's crazy. But anyway, so we talked about Nue's Exorcist, and I mentioned that, you know, for all intents and purposes, I wanted to like the manga because the character was just instantly, like, magnetic. You know, like, her design was just top tier, and it made me want to know what that manga was about. And then when we got into the manga and the story was kind of weak, you know, it was kind of like, well, that's kind of disappointing. You know, so I feel like one of two things needs to happen is, like, the character does have to, there is a lot to be said about design, you know, like, the design has to be, like, really eye-catching and interesting. But there has to be some substance to keep you there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's most of what I have is here is there something about their character caught my attention. And I was like, okay, yeah, I like this character. So for specifically two of these, actually, their storylines and how they played out is why I put them on the list, and not because of their just their look generally.
Right. So, I mean, I would love to hear your number five. Hit me with it.
All right. So I want to start off by saying that this number five is like a personal pick from when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kid me telling the world that something I didn't tell other kids because they may have thought I was weird. You know, kids can be cruel. So anyways, I picked May.
That's why you
got to
find the biggest one and like knock him out.
Yeah, that'll work. I was.
It's a Sonic Boom reference.
I was bigger than all the kids in my school. I was taller than everyone else. I grew really quickly.
Oh, okay.
So I was the biggest kid. I picked May from Pokemon. Gen 3 was really my Pokemon. I played all the other ones before, obviously, but Gen 3 was the first one that I became absolutely enamored with the series, both in the show and in the games. And May's like your rival / friend partner person, because I played the boy, the male character. And like,
it was if I remember correctly, Gen 3 was the first time that we had a rival that was actually a friend as opposed to an enemy, you know, because like Gen 1, we had like Blue, and Gen 2, we had Silver, both of whom were like openly hostile towards us a majority of the journey.
Yeah. I mean, this game gave you two organizations to fight against, and you had to fight against basically gods, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't need to give you a rival I was going to fight. Not fight alongside you, because the whole thing about her fighting next to you was cool to me, because I felt like I was having my own Pokemon journey like in the anime. May, I don't know, something about May. I've always been attracted to that kind of character who's kind of a little bit of a tomboy, but not quite, because she still wanted to do like pretty stuff, but you know, she is who she is. That was just kind of my very first, the first time I watched an anime where I was like, oh yeah, I think I kind of like this girl, this type. And then the game, of course, I just grew attached. But
yeah, everybody has like that type of character for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
the thing is, like, dude, Pokemon is just filled with like banger characters, right? And it feels almost criminal that like they show up once in a while in the show and then disappear for long periods of time. Which I feel like is kind of like where the card game just kind of like really shines, because every now and then characters that you see and remember from the show will show up and they'll have like their own card, right? And it's just like so cool to have it. Like for example, she's not on my list, but Cynthia from Pokemon is arguably one of my favorites.
She's definitely up there, yeah.
Yeah, so like she is memorable as hell, and I remember like her battle was just so stupidly hard. And what was it? Whenever me and my wife were collecting like Pokemon cards like really hardcore back in like 2018, 2019, 2020. There was that one, I think it was like, oh gosh, Ultra Prism or whatever, was the set, and it had like the full art Cynthia card. And one day while grocery shopping, you know, the grocery store has like Pokemon card packs.
Yeah.
And I opened it and I pulled like the full art Cynthia, and I was like, oh my God, this is so kick ass. And it's still one of my favorite cards to this day. It is so good.
So what's your number five?
Oh, are we moving on to me? I thought we were going to talk about Pokemon some more.
I don't know if there's much more to talk about May, really. I don't know. I just kind of I had a kid crush on her.
What, you didn't watch like the Ruby and Sapphire? What's it called?
The remix?
Like
the manga.
The TV show. Or the manga,
dating the manga. They're like together. There's like a love story between them.
No kidding.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Are we talking about like May and what's the protagonist? Brendan. Yeah, Brendan.
So they're not May and Brendan in that, they're Ruby and Sapphire.
Like Ruby and Sapphire, right?
Yeah, yeah. But... and they actually have a romance story. I didn't finish it though, so I don't know if they actually end up together or not. But I hated the design for Emerald. Awful.
I don't even know who Emerald is.
Look it up. So, you'll be like, oh, what? Why?
Let me pull that up super quick. Emerald. Pokemon character. Let me see. Oh, I do not like this. This is...
yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Like, I don't know.
Holy moly. No, that is...
terrible? Yes, I know.
What's with the eyebrows?
I don't know.
Their hair looks like a croissant.
Yeah, which is funny, because we wouldn't get croissants in Pokemon until Gen X, or Pokemon X.
Oh, well. Anyway, that's that's your number five. So we're moving on to my number five.
Yeah.
I said that I had one, what do you call it, video game character on here. I actually have two, and I didn't realize this. Jeez, I love Edelgard from Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Okay, yeah, I was expecting.
So Edelgard, dude, like, oh my gosh. For one thing, the story, amazing. The character design, you know, like pre-time skip, it's whatever, right? But post-time skip, that is a sick look.
I'm like actually a fan of pre-time skip rather than post-time skip, because all I can think about is her fish eyes at the end of the game. If you dated her.
Right. I did. But, yeah. But geez, though, like, gosh, like, so the design post-time skip to me is kind of really cool, because I'm a huge fan of, like, armor dresses. So, mm-hmm. like, Saber from Fate Stay Night, to me, was always just, like, a really cool-looking character. I was like, see, like, this is a great alternative to, like, the bikini armor. It's just, like, the armor dress, and I dig it. And Edelgard had that going on. She had, like, a really interesting-looking axe. The headdress with the horns, I was like, this is sick as hell, dog. And, like, it just, like, the red, I'm like, as a commander for an army... this is a good look. I mean, like, it is imposing, terrifying as hell, regal. This is so awesome. So design-wise, she's just rocking it, you know, just killing it. The story, like I said, really good. The thing that I really enjoy about Edelgard is that she kind of has that mentality that I admire in characters, where I love it whenever a character doesn't let, you know, seemingly impossible odds weigh them down. Quite the opposite. The fact that that something seems impossible just fuels them to try harder. And that's basically what her whole story is, you know, like, hey, look, we're fighting the status quo and we're not going to lose. And so, like, whenever a character has that, it's really hard for me to be like, oh, for me to not be like, oh, hell yeah, let's go. The other one that I can think of off the top of my head is Erwin from Attack on Titan. I would have followed that man to hell and back. You know, like the way that he talks, right, and yeah. Edelgard's much the same, because she as a military leader, you know, like it's really weird because, you know, like in the game she's what, like post time skip she's what, 21? But
I don't know how old they were in the first part, because they were all, yeah, they
some
were basically
some were older than others, so like, you know, some were like 18, 19, but like so time skip is what, 2 years, so like some would be like in their 20s, others would be like 21. There were some that were older than others.
Yeah, she's 17 at the beginning, and then she's 23 after the time skip.
Oh, okay, so the time skip's actually a lot longer than I remember.
Yeah, it's
so
crazy.
23. So Edelgard, dude, like I'm like, she just, I love characters with that fortitude of mind, with that like singular focus that they can take on the world, and yeah, they might be suffering on the inside, but they're not going to let that slow them down. And Edelgard had that, and it's kind of like the reason why like the Black Eagle run in Fire Emblem Three Houses was my favorite, because I really like stood behind what she said, you know, like where hey, a person's birth shouldn't determine that they're just forever above everyone else, you know, like people should have to like fight for what they want. And I'm like, hell yeah, Edelgard, let's go.
I always felt like she was, her storyline was like, we're going into hell with the best intentions, and then ruins literally everything on her way down. It's like, that's her whole storyline. She like she like does good, but she kills almost everybody. You can spare one person or two people. You can spare Hilda, and you can spare not Dimitri. Dimitri has to die.
No, Dimitri had to die. There was no other option.
The only one where you can save basically everybody is the one where Edelgard has to die, and that's Dimitri's storyline.
So I really enjoyed Edelgard as a character. I don't deny that there are things where I'm like, she probably could have done this different, and there would have been a lot more
she
people
leads to your
on
dad
her
dying.
Side. Yeah.
She kills your dad.
Yeah.
And you're like,
she
you
does
know
kill,
what? That's
well,
fine.
She doesn't kill your dad. You know, like Bronya kills your dad. So, I mean, there's
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Bronya does, but she was being let in basically by Edelgard.
She was led in by Edelgard.
And Edelgard was going to kill everybody, too. She was going to kill all the students. And one of the things,
dude, like,
she was behind it.
There is no denying that Edelgard was a little bloodthirsty. But I honestly do feel that you're right when you say that she's going to hell with good intentions. Like, her whole thing is, people shouldn't be just automatically subjects because somebody decided so a long time ago. And it's something that I agree with, you know, like, hey, people should have the opportunity to lift themselves up by their own bootstraps if that's what they choose. And I don't know that
the
church in Fire Emblem Three Houses was really all that bad when you really think about it. Like,
no,
in
they
my
actually
personal
really
opinion,
weren't. Edelgard was actually like, the worst of the characters for the storylines, which sucks because I like her story and I like where she goes, but she was kind of just the bad person. Like, she didn't need to die, and she didn't need to kill anybody either. She could have done it.
She didn't. Better. But like the thing is also like a lot of her choices were informed by tragedy, you know, because when you really think about it, is she went through a lot. And because she went through a lot, she kind of had this mentality that there was no other choice, you know, like because in her head, well, the ones who lurk in the dark exist because the church exists.
But
therefore,
they're part
you
of
know,
her. The people who lurk in the dark, she ends up hiring. When you go down her
she
line,
she ends up hiring them,
and
like,
then
so
she ends
here,
up working with them.
I get 100%. We agree with each other because, I said, there's a lot of things where I'm like, bro, Edelgard could have done differently here. Like, so for example, I don't agree that she allied herself with the people who tortured her for
she
the
did,
sake
though.
Of crest research, right? And she did, which was stupid to me because I'm like, look, here's the thing. I'm all for, like, let's tear down the established order that says that people are just born to where they belong to in life. But let's not ally ourselves with literal monsters. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. I feel like her storyline is the U.S. after World War II.
A little bit.
Because they took Nazi scientists and stuff and put them in charge to take all their technologies. And so she's like, oh, people in the dark doing bad things to us specifically, we'll just take them because we need their stuff. We need them.
Now, here's something that I would have been 100% behind. And I feel like this is probably something that was on the writing room table at some point, but then they decided to scrap it. So, like, this is why, you know, like, what is it? Like, Crimson Flower was, like, the smallest
the
campaign in the game.
It's because it breaks into two.
Yeah, the shortest. Yeah, I think that there was this was on the writing table, which was like, okay, so Edelgard allies herself with those who lurk in the dark, and then in the end she ends up betraying them, so that way she basically kills two birds with one stone. She lures them into a false sense of security. She pulls out the rug from underneath them, takes them out, and then takes down the church. I feel like that was in the writing room table, and then somebody said, "Oh man, we don't have enough space in the cartridge for that," and so they were like, "Okay, just cut Edelgard's story short." And
No,
we'll call it a day.
they put a whole fourth story in there, so they could have done it.
You're right. They did put like the Ash and Wolves thing. In that case, this must have gone something like, hey, you know what? We can finish Edelgar's story, but then we don't do the Ash and Wolves. And then somebody was like, oh, well, we want the Ash and Wolves. They're cool.
They were cool, but they didn't. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Edelgard's
They added
fine,
nothing to the story.
but
Yeah,
you could have picked
but
way better female characters in the game. There's so many good options.
Well, Dorothea was my first
Yeah,
choice because,
Dorothea,
firstly, I love
Marianne,
her.
Lysithia. Like, there's so.
Lysithia also good. I feel like Lysithia is almost like prototype Edelgard 2 or like mini Edelgard, because I feel like the only thing that holds Lysithia back is that she's very aware that she doesn't have that much time left, and so
She
she
lives if
doesn't
you
feel
date
like
her.
struggling, huh?
She doesn't die if you marry her or do your her.
No, she doesn't die if you marry her. You find a cure, but. But Lysithia kind of has like that same mentality where, you know, like, no, I don't like this, but like at the same time she's like, but it's already happened and I don't have that much life to burn doing
Yeah.
whatever, so I'm just not gonna do it. So I it feels like Lysithia is Edelgard if Edelgard just didn't have the drive to push forward.
Lysithia wants to master magic before she dies. So like she's still doing stuff. My main issue is that she's just mean to Ignatz, and I loved Ignatz as a character.
I did not
She
like Ignatz,
she's
so
mean
her
to him
being
for
mean to
no
Ignatz was
reason. He's
so
just like,
good.
I'm painting today. She's like, you suck. I hate you. You're so
You
bad at
suck,
stuff.
Ignatz.
And I'm like, okay. Well, I
You
went
know
to
what's funny? Every time that we had one of those like conversations where she
Yeah.
was mean to Ignatz, I was on her corner like, yeah, Ignatz, you suck. I was like,
And then she ends up apologizing at the end, but it's still not worth it.
right.
Like, I understand you're
But
dying, but please be nice to the guy who's being nice to you and trying to help you out.
right.
Like, your life,
But
yeah.
so, I mean, Edelgard was definitely like my pick, and the reason why is because I really admire like her tenacity, you know, like her willingness to like rise above literally everything.
She
Did she
made her
make
own
good
problems,
choices?
though.
Yeah, like so again, did she make good choices? Not really, but the thing is you can't trust the status quo to change itself. So
Yeah, but you could
she
have
had to
worked with
do
somebody
something.
too. But she let her
Well,
she literally led to the
I
downfall
honestly
of
think
Dimitri.
I honestly do feel like she probably could have worked with like the Lesser Alliance for sure. The Kingdom of Fargus, I'm not 100% positive on that one. But Lesser Alliance, I'm like, yeah, if you allied yourself with Claude, you could have done things with Claude.
Yeah, Claude's
But
whole storyline too was probably the most s
it
central.
was a little out there.
It was kind of like, yeah, I'm like, because he's half, right? He's half of the people they
Right.
all hate, and then he's half of the people that he's with. So his whole storyline is very much the good guy, the guy who wants to actually rise above adversity and wants to fix things the Claude way. Whereas Edelgard's like,
Claude
I'm in
wanted to
charge.
end
I want to be the only way
racism.
to fix this is for me to become the Empress of the world. But by doing that, she's going to take all the people that have done terrible things to her and let them also rise up because she needs them.
I try to look at it from the lens of the problem is she's also young, you know. So like when you're young, you're one of two different people when you're young. You're the person who will listen to reason, or you're the person who feels like you have to do it all on your own. And
Yeah.
she's very much the second one. So I feel like after what she went through, she almost had like this mindset that she can't trust anyone because she doesn't know where the evil is coming from. So
She knew where it was coming
the only
from,
way
and she chose it. She said, "You're coming with
to
me, evil."
I know it. I mean, like I said, dude, like she made choices that I didn't like,
Yeah.
but she also like her heart was in the right place, and I really wanted to believe that she could make a better world. And you know, like it's what's it called? Edge of Dawn is a song that's in Fire Emblem Three Houses that's written from her point of view and is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, the
I
music
love
and
the
Yeah, Three Houses was by far the best Fire Emblem overall game, but I just didn't like that there wasn't a storyline that I connected the most with. You ready to move on to number four? Or you want to talk more
Yeah,
about
you're number four.
Edelgard's decision
I
to
could talk. I could talk about Edelgard for hours, dude. But anyway, carry on.
Okay. Number four is pretty simple for me. But remember when I mentioned there was one that was basically all on design and not how the character ends up at the end?
Yes.
This is that one. This is Hinata from Naruto. Hinata was by far, when I first watched the show as a kid, I had a huge crush on Hinata. Because something about her was endearing to me. Didn't care that she was stalking Naruto. As a kid, I didn't think about it a whole lot. I'm just like, oh, this girl's kind of cute. Blah, blah. And I loved the like purple black hair. The design overall was just something I loved. But they kind of ruin her character later on and make her just kind of a housewife who does nothing. Except for kind of take care of two kids, which she barely does.
I feel like we kind of have like this conversation every time where I'm like, dude, being a housewife is not a problem.
No, housewife is fine if she didn't have other ambitions. But then she's like, my entire ambition is to be with man. And it's just kind of tragic.
Housewives listening to this podcast, I do not share in Sacros.
Hey, I
use that being a housewife is just a bad thing.
No, I didn't say that. Housewives are great. Housewives are also great.
I'm exaggerating.
Those are okay. If you stay home and your specific other can pay for you, lucky for starters.
Yeah.
For sure. Off, Hinata's just such a wasted character. She could have been so cool. And the one moment she gets in the entirety of Naruto isn't even canon. So they never reference it again because it was never canon. The pain fight. It wasn't canon. Just three designs. Her first design was cute. I still liked it a lot. I liked the mesh shirt underneath the jacket. I don't know. Something about that. Just the design of her, the hair, this and that. She was the first character I ever tried to draw as a kid. Outside of Pokemon, of course, and Goku. Which I never realized was able to draw Goku. The hair got me. Yeah, so Hinata was great. She's character-wise cool. Did not like her. I liked her second design, but did not like her third design. She's just a mom, which is fine. But they tried to make her too much into Kushina, Naruto's mom. She basically takes the same personality, which is kind of sad.
A little bit, yeah. I can see that, yeah.
She almost dies to her cousin. She doesn't want to be the heiress anymore. Her little sister takes over because she's just got more drive and skill and passion and whatnot, but... Yeah, I don't
know. That's something to be said about Hinata is that I always felt like she was a ninja because it was expected of her. I don't think that she would have picked that for herself, you know?
I wish she would have done something, though. She had talents. She worked at the hospital for a little while after the war with Sakura, but then she, like, left that too. I didn't watch the movie, actually. I don't actually know what happened in the movie. Crap, I haven't seen the movie. Where Naruto and her finally fall in love. I know what happens in it, but I haven't seen it. Anyways, I don't have a whole lot. I don't want to turn this into a tired Naruto thing. So Hinata's my number four. I had a childhood crush on her. I love her design. I have a figure of her on the thing using the non-canon wolf lion fist things. Love her ocular jutsu. Her ocular jutsu. Because the ability to like cast that and see all around you except for beneath you. Like directly beneath you. But be able to see like miles ahead and stuff. Really cool ability.
I would ask you, do you think that you would be a little easier on her if she had gotten like one good win in the show? Like even if it wasn't like a lot of wins, but like, you know, just one good fight where she won and it was canon. Do you think that you would like forgive her for just like not being as ambitious?
I wish she just had a job of some kind. She just did something. Because when you become an adult, like being a house mom is fine. You're right. I guess being a housewife is fine, but it's like it's kind of wasted because she had potential in fighting and in assisting abilities. Her eyes were really useful, but she never uses them again, really, except for to spy on her kids. I guess she uses it once, which is kind of weird. No, I wish she did have a good fight though, because she doesn't even get a fight. Everything she does is non-canon. Like, I can't remember the name of the author all of a sudden. What was he thinking?
Kishimoto.
Kishimoto did nothing with her. He made a cool design character. He did the same thing with several other girl characters, actually.
I was going to say, well, I got to tell you this. Kishimoto is probably not a good example of a character who can handle a large cast really well. Because it sometimes felt like he just kept adding characters and then doing nothing with them.
He used them for when they were usable and then got rid of them afterwards. Or just left them to the side. Or he killed Neji. Which also, there's a theory that he didn't die, but that's neither here nor there. Hinata's cool, but I only put her on here because I didn't have another option. She should be like a secondary character, not because I didn't love her, but because the history of myself and her. The first two are just historical picks, not because of what I feel nowadays.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm bad at this. Sorry, guys.
Just for reference, I told Sacro what we were doing literally when he logged on. I was like, hey, man, make a list of 5 waifus right now.
Yeah. I did not have time. I didn't even get to look. But that's fine.
Right.
I'm here for the content.
Yeah. So I guess we're moving on to my number 4.
Yeah,
my number 4 is actually a recent one. It's Nicole Damara from Zenless Zone Zero.
Okay, you and have 2 video games talked... in your top 4 and 5, I just realized.
Yeah, I realized that too. But the thing about Nicole is recently, whenever we did the episode, when we recorded the episode of Itchy the Witch, which should be live by the time that this one goes up. Let's see, whenever we recorded that episode, we talked about a character archetype that's becoming more common these days, which is the girl failure. And Nicole Damara is very much that. But like the thing is, it's by choice. She doesn't have to be a girl failure, but she chooses it. And the thing is, we talked about like design wise, you know, like characters that pop. And Nicole very much pops whenever you're looking among Zenless Zone Zero characters. She is one of like my favorite aesthetically. And I was like, she's just really cool looking. I mean, because she's got like that girl boss vibe. And she's kind of like, she's the leader of one of the factions in the game, the Cunning Hares. And, you know, she talks the talk. Like, you know,
is she furry?
No. She's a human.
Okay.
They're, you know, like they're called, originally their faction was called Gentle House, but because, you know, she's very wily. So everyone would like kind of like just be like, oh, you guys are cunning like hares. So she was like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, I'm changing the faction name. We're the Cunning Hares now.
Foxes.
Yeah. But so the thing is, she's very wily. She's very intelligent. Like financially, it seems like she's a failure because they're always broke, despite the fact that their services don't come cheap and they have clientele. Like it is always the case that in the game, it's always mentioned that Nicole and the rest of the Cunning Hares always have work, and you know that they must be making money because Nicole's not the kind to like, you know, offer discounts unless, you know, she feels like this will lead to like lucrative opportunities down the line. And you hear from here and there that she's in debt to a lot of people. So at first I thought, I'm like, well, she doesn't have money because she's always in debt. And it turns out that isn't it. There was like Zenless Zone Zero kind of puts out like these little character bio videos, you know, the same way that League of Legends does. And the Nicole one kind of like brings a lot of light as to why she's always broke. And the reason why is, you know, like in her character bio, you know, she was raised in an orphanage. And, you know, whenever she was in an orphanage, one of her friends who lived with her in the orphanage got sick. So she kind of, you know, took it upon herself, you know, like she wanted to do something for her friend. Her friend said that they just wanted to see like one, if I remember correctly, I might be messing this up, but like she wanted to see like the sunset, and you know, like, but she was like stuck in this hospital room. So Nicole goes to look for ways to like make her better so that way they could take her out to see the sunset. And the only way she can do this is by raising money. So she gathers all of like the kids in the orphanage, and they're going around just looking for loose change, you know, like doing little things here and there to kind of like earn money. But no matter how hard they tried, they couldn't earn enough money. And eventually what happens is the friend dies, right? But you know, Nicole kind of like has like this idea of like, okay, well, if we can't bring you to the sunset, then we're going to bring the sunset to you. And this is like the most like, this is the suspend your disbelief because this doesn't happen. But like, basically what the kids do is they're holding up the coins and reflecting the sunlight into like her window. You know, so like basically, so like the kid who's in the hospital room just has like the sunlight shining on them by them reflecting it off coins. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's suspension of disbelief just all the way up there. Yeah, no, I mean, no shot.
Coins aren't even shiny enough to do that typically.
Right. So, but the thing is, you know, ultimately this kind of like leads to her kind of like developing this mentality that money is something that can go a long way to solving any problem that you can think of. And so she kind of has like this mentality where like we must make money, and that's kind of why she runs like her organization and has like these really predatory prices for that very reason. And so you're wondering, and I'm like, well, how come she doesn't ever have money if she's always charging so much? And the reason why is because a lot of the money that she makes, she personally gives away to orphanages. And so, you know, she's always surviving on like the bare minimum for herself. And I was like, oh my God, like, I love it whenever like they just kind of like hit you with like, you know, this correlates to like the character backstory a little bit, you know, but at the same time, this doesn't change the character personally, so to speak, in that, you know, Nicole is, she is wily, she is driven, she is like very fiscally wise. But the reason why she sucks at business is because she's always giving her money away to people who were in her position when she was a kid. And I'm like, this is beautiful. I love it. Plus, it's just funny the way that, you know, like whenever you interact with her in the game, a lot of the times, like the subject of money comes up and she tries to downplay it like it's nothing. Right? So it's like, should you be spending money on this? And she's all like, hey, listen, I got it figured out. Don't you worry about the money. I got the money. And so it's just like a really fun thing. So design wise, she's great. Personality wise, the girl boss vibe is fantastic. And the fact that she fits both the girl boss vibe plus the girl failure archetype is just extra funny to see, because she has all of this aura of like, I'm in control. But on the, you know, on the flip side, she's like, I have no money. And then additionally, you know, like the backstory is really, really good. So, I mean, just like a really solid character all around.
I've never actually played Zenless. My brother plays it, but I'm sure his tastes would not match yours.
He likes Shark Girl? Or like the new one, like the pop star?
I don't know. Actually, I have to ask him. He does like the Shark Girl, though. Yeah. He likes water themed characters.
Ellen Joe. Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, like, I can't even think of anything off the top of my head, but yeah, just water-themed characters. He also loves Saber. Saber's his favorite character of all time.
Yeah. I mean, just really solid character.
Yeah,
design-wise, excellent. The gauntlets with the armor dress, fantastic. Love it.
Let's get out of that conversation. And my number three is... So this is from my favorite anime of all time. It's Yin from Darker Than Black. If you remember Yin, she is the doll that ends up developing feelings for Hei, which is impossible because dolls can't have attachments or feelings, which ends up leading to her becoming something more, which I can't spoil because you still haven't seen season two. So Yin has this kind of like, she wants to be more than just a doll, but she has like this sad backstory about how she lost her, because how she became a doll was different than how most people did. She went through a tragedy first, which turned her into a doll, whereas most people they turn into a doll just because they were randomly selected by the whatever the powers are, because they don't fully explain it to us. But Yin is, she wears a purple dress. She has like the silver hair. A lot of her story is about her wanting to be a person again. She doesn't want to be a doll. And you get hints of that at the very end of the show when she pulls Hei out of the darkness that he's falling into by his powers. She reaches in, she says, I need you. And he realizes that he has to live for somebody. He can't just die because his sister's gone. And he pulls himself out. And then there's kind of a romance between the two. Lightly. Sadly, he has like three romantic options and they all barely get any screen time with him because he's so focused on the mission. But Yin is definitely the right one. Good. He pretends to marry her in order for them to sneak away to America. Then they end up in Russia. For some reason. Yin's just a fun character. I don't know. I like her. She doesn't have much like in the way of personality because she's supposed to be a doll. She just have no emotions whatsoever. But there are little pieces that sneak through. The way she reaches for Hei's hand when he's like moving around and stuff. Because she needs to know, you know, he's there and she wants him to know that she cares about him. So she just kind of has that story to me. I don't know. I've always kind of been in love with her. She was like an important character for when I was growing up. Because when I first saw the anime, I just got back into anime.
Right.
I remember you mentioned
that it was like the one of the ones that you've watched first upon returning.
Yeah. I stopped watching it in high school because an ex of mine hated anime. And so I didn't watch it with her. She thought anime watchers were losers. But she's another story. Maybe not a story for the podcast. But she was just super
it
weird.
Could be a story for the podcast, because in all honesty, I'm like, dude, like, we come a long way as anime fans, because there was once upon a time where it was just like a really niche interest, and now it's so mainstream, it's unreal.
Anyway, that's my number three. Just Yin, character I fell in love with when I got back into anime, kind of stands out to me as a character that is someone that wants to do things, wants to be more, but also kind of fragile. So, yeah, she's a good character. Yeah.
She's a really cool looking character too. I really like in the few scenes that she was in, she really like stood out.
Yeah, she because everyone else was.
Because, dude, everyone else in that show was like very detective noir, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like, you know, like cops and agents who were just over it, you know, just over it. Like, it's always the same crap. I'm too old for this, and kind of like that, right? But whereas she kind of seemed like almost like. Like putting a vase of flowers to brighten up a room, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
In the scene, she always stood out because she was such a stark contrast to the way that everybody else was just kind of dark themed, so to speak.
Darker than black, you might say.
Yeah, darker yeah, than was, black, you might
she
say.
She was the purple flowers at the end of the cutscene.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's your number three? What do we got?
My number three is one that very quickly rose to be one of my favorites, and I think that it's one that you'll agree with. I don't think that she's on your list because I heard you writing your list, and so I'm pretty confident you took her off.
Yeah,
your
yeah.
Forger from
yeah, yeah.
The Spy
That's
Family.
That was my number three, and I moved her because I was like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, your from Spy Family, dude, is so funny because to me, like, and I had a different character as my number five, but I took her off because I feel like your and her kind of play the same role, you know? But the thing is, I enjoy Spy Family the anime more than I enjoy That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime. Not that I don't like slime. I think slime is fun. But what's it called? Shion from That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime and Yor from Spy Family kind of have a lot of similar characteristics. So, mm-hmm. like, I would say that I'm counting Shion in number three as well. But, you know, like, I picked Yor because, like, I feel like the story just kind of flows easier to understand in Spy Family. But basically, both of them, like, really strong, really airheaded, you know, like, very loyal to their family, and really terrible at cooking. You know, like, that, like, dude, like, literally, it's a checklist. Shion and Yor, same stuff, different anime.
I wonder if that's a... Like, why are women so bad at cooking in anime? Why is that the thing? Because it's such
because
a thing. I saw a meme the other day where someone was like, had a bunch of green slime in a pan. And they're like, this is what women cooking in anime looks like. And I'm like, why?
Well, I imagine that the reason why is because, you know, Japan is a little bit traditional as mm-hmm. far as gender roles go. So if, you know, if you're going to be a housewife, you kind of have to have like the ability to cook. You know, it would look shameful if you didn't. So it's kind of like a funny joke when a woman in anime is just can't cook, you know, like, as a matter of fact, you'll notice that in a lot of like romance slice of life, making the bento for, you know, your love interest is kind of like a big deal.
Yeah, right.
And you know, so it's always looks pretty, always looks super cute, you know, like they really put a lot of love and effort into it. So it's funny to see characters like Shion and Yor who are trying to do the same thing, but they are just so terrible at it. You know, I think the only difference between Shion and Yor is that, you know, like, whereas Yor is a little more timid and a little more, you know, a little more nurturing, Shion is a little more bombastic, you know, so like that's like the one difference is their personality. But so if we're talking about Yor, I love, you know, like in Spy Family, she's one of the best pieces of comic relief because I love it whenever like something's just like so impossible and she's just ridiculously strong to the point where like things like if she swings a racket and a tennis ball, she'll shred it with the wires on the tennis ball on the racket, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of my favorite gags is Yor is just stronger than she should be, like the stampede of animals at the academy, and she just assassin takes down the like the big leader of the herd, and you know, we're just supposed to like 100% keep it straight that, you know, like, yeah, this is normal, I guess, like the way that everybody just kind of plays dumb like they didn't see it.
My favorite episode of the show
uh-huh.
with Yor specifically is when she gets shot in the butt with a bullet. And she's going through this strong man the entire time. Like, it doesn't hurt, but she looks angry. And Lloyd's just like, why is she angry? Does she not love? Does she not want to do this anymore? What do I do? And he like takes her out and does all these nice things. And then she hits him super hard where he knocks out. Yeah. But he's so cool. He's a backflip and lands like he hasn't just been knocked out by the strongest thing to hit him in his entire life. And it's such a funny moment. And then she ends up drinking poison and the poison is strong.
Just numbs
but
the pain.
She's not stronger or she is stronger than the poison and it numbs the pain. And it's just, yours a great character. Yeah, yeah. Design wise too. Love the hair loopies. Zero sense to how they actually work, but that's fine.
I agree. Yeah, like zero sense, but it's fine. As a matter of fact, I think that Tatsuya Endo included a little like gag page in the Spy Family manga where he basically drew how he believes that Yor's hair would work.
Yeah, I saw that and they're like, and it just works. It's like, no, man. That's not how hair
that's
works.
That's not how that works, but okay. Yeah, sure, Tatsuya Endo, that's a thing, I guess. But, you know, like, so she kind of has like that, like super strong, like a character that is too nice to be as strong as they are, you know? Mm-hmm. But additionally, I really admire kind of like the story behind all that, you know, where it's like, during the war, you know, like she loses her parents, so it's up to her to raise her little brother. And the strength that she gained throughout her life was because, you know, she was the responsible guardian to this little brother, right? And the thing is, you know, it feels like that just never went away, because if you see the way that she acts towards Anya, I kind of feel like this is how she acted towards her brother. It has to be. You know, like this is like a weird maternal instinct that she developed and that just never went away. And it's just like really heartwarming to see sometimes the way that she'll interact, because that's not her daughter, you know, like, but she's
is,
like,
though.
Yeah, but she basically is. So it's a really, really sweet, really wholesome interaction with that. But also, you know, like the way that she's very clearly falling for Lloyd, but she's always acting like it's not a thing, you know, like no shot. Like, so a lot of times she'll be like, well, I have to be a good wife so that he won't leave me. But it's all because of like the front that I'm trying to put up, you know, so that people don't figure out I'm an assassin. And I'm like, yeah, sure. That's why this is like, I don't believe you for a second. I don't think you believe
it. Setup. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. It's a really fun setup, and I just think that the two leads in that, you know, Lloyd and Yor, just being like these two characters who are like so clueless about everything except the thing that they're just perfectly good at, mm-hmm. you know, it's hilarious.
Well, Lloyd's good at literally
really
everything.
Well, Lloyd is good at everything because it's a means to an end, you know, not because he's just good at things, but because, you know, he has to be, because mm-hmm. a master spy needs it. You know, like, I feel like if Lloyd wasn't kind of like constantly trying to be the perfect spy, he wouldn't be as good at as many things as he is. You know, like, this is all a means to being the perfect spy. And it's admirable in its own way, because his whole purpose for being a spy is, you know, to prevent, you know, suffering the way that he endured when he was a kid. And I actually can't wait until the anime adapts Lloyd's backstory, because it is kind of one of those like really, really, really sobering things in Spy Family. Spy Family being so weird in the way that it balances like slice of life and comedy action with just like the hardest hitting stories that you'll hear sometimes, you know? And for Lloyd, it was a lot of like, you know, I was a kid and a brat, and then war happened and I realized really fast that I needed to grow up. And it's just like it really like does destroy you internally. It's a big, big story. But yeah, you know, like you're hilarious. I love her character. And one of my favorite scenes with her of recent was definitely, you know, and I read this in the manga long before it was animated, but in the anime is whenever she's fighting on the ship against all of these assassins trying to protect like this political refugee. Mm-hmm. And she's really getting her ass kicked, and the thing that pulls her through is the fact that she has a new family, and she feels like they're gonna wonder what happened to her if she suddenly disappears. And I was like, oh, I love this. This is so good. I was like, this is perfect.
And Anya saved the day too.
And Anya saved the day, yeah. So as far as characters go, I just think she's really, really good. You know, design-wise, the Thorn Princess look, killing it. Absolutely gorgeous. Love it.
I absolutely adore both her outfits. Her stay-at-home mom outfit, or I guess not stay-at-home mom, but her mom outfit, and then her, I'm about to kill this whole group of people, and it's going to be with these two hairpins.
And that stay-at-home outfit with the slit in the back got me acting unwise, brother. I'll tell you something.
That outfit made a meme, basically.
Bro, because all I'm saying is, look, if I was Lloyd, I don't think my mind would be on Operation Strix nearly half the time that he is. You know, like, anyway, your number two, let's hear it.
Okay, so my number two is a dual pairing because it has to be, except for there's a third for me only. So number two is Makoto slash Kasumi from Persona 5, or Royal, I guess, because Kasumi's in Royal. Because the first time I played through it, Makoto was by far my favorite character. I love how she immediately melded with the main character, and they became kind of like the duo that led the team, like the mom and dad, basically, of the group. She gets the most out of dialogue moments with him. So, like, you know, when you play a game, like, you don't play Persona, but you talk to him kind of like to do social links. You get 10, 11, if they're your allies. So you get 10, and the 10 social links slowly build your friendship up. And then at one point you can decide whether you want to date them or not. They will always hint at it. And then you get a choice at that point, yes or no. And how you say it will matter. So I ended up dating Makoto because when I first saw her, she's pretending to, because the principal asked her to watch you because she's a student council president. And so she's following around with a book, pretending to read. And you can see her little eyes peeping over, and her character model just follows you around. So everywhere you walk in school, you'll see her around a corner or somewhere, pretending to hide. Mm-hmm. It's very much like the one we watched.
Notice me, senpai?
No, it's very much like the one we watched recently. The Oshinoko creator made it.
Kaguya-sama Love is War.
It's very Kaguya-coded. The way she, yes. but she's obviously not interested in you as a love interest. She's watching it because the principal asked her to, because he's like, I won't write you a letter of recommendation unless you do it, because he's a scumbag. They're all scumbags. That's like 90% of the game. Mostly adults suck. And the cool thing is you get to change their hearts, change how they are, and make them confess to all the terrible things they've done, which is a cool idea. And it radiates very well.
Which is what I do with my friend group. It's great.
Yeah. They make them commit, like they turn themselves in, basically. The game gets very heavy very fast, and it only gets heavier as you go, all the way to finding out that the prime minister, who lied to everybody and everyone can see he's lying, he wins it anyways. And then they force him to admit that he cheated, was a terrible person, treated everyone terribly, was harassing women, and all this other stuff. Just all around awful person. You know how they do.
Just terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah. People in power and being terrible people. Like, what else is new, right? It's a very fun story.
Yeah, that's why people like Edelgard have to do what they have to do. I mean.
Yeah, kind of. Except for the people in power weren't nearly as awful as she becomes. Not talking about that right now.
What are we talking about? Like, the ending tells you that the land thrives, that Fodlan thrives under the rule of Edelgard.
Every single ending tells you that they thrive after they defeated the other people.
I know. Ergo, there is a universe where Edelgard made the right choices.
She could have done it differently. Another conversation, like I said. So Makoto's like my first choice, right? Because that's the only character in there. But there's like Haru, who I liked. Some of the other girls were okay. There's one real choice I had to make, but I didn't because I'm playing as a 7 or 16-year-old boy. There's Takumi.
Oh, were you going to like either, what is it, like date the nurse or date the teacher?
No, she's a doctor.
Oh, she's a doctor. Either way.
Yeah, she's a doctor. She's a goth doctor, and she's the death arcana. And her storyline is very tragic. I really want you to play this game, so I'm not going to explain it fully, but essentially, like, someone lied about something to get her fired, but she was, and they wanted to keep her out of it because they wanted to sell the medicine she created at a higher price rather than what she wanted to do, which was give it to people for free, essentially. So, you know, what happened with insulin in real life, where the guy said, this is free, and then now it's sold for, like, $200.
I see.
Yeah, so a lot of this is based on real, like, reality stuff. I can point to everywhere that the specific storyline was told. In fact, the first game came out in 2016, so there's a lot of parallels mm-hmm. between that time frame and the world. Anyways, Makoto, she's following around with a book. She's being cute. She hides from you whenever you walk up to her. And she's trying to keep tabs on you. Then she figures out that you guys aren't lying. You guys are the Phantom Thieves, and you guys are helping the world. And she decides that she wants to do the same thing because of her dad, who wanted to do the same thing but was killed because he was trying to do the right thing. But when he followed the end of the line, it was to his superiors. So, yeah, this whole game's about corruption. Very much about corruption. It's great. It's a great game. It's about teenagers fighting corruption, which is cool. And then Royal comes out, right? And Royal's like, we have a new character for you. And I'm like, that's fine. Makoto's my one and only. And then Kasumi dances right in front of you and goes, hi, I'm Kasumi. And I'm like, okay, I'm done. You're right. Sorry, Makoto. Kasumi's new.
Who is it that makes Persona? Is it Atlas?
Yeah, Atlas. Dude, Atlas, every time they release a game, Atlas. It's a banger. Yeah, thank you, Atlas. The Atlas god. They just know every time. Yeah. She's okay, so her whole story is that she's... Oh, man, that's a lot of spoiler, actually. Okay, so essentially, Kasumi's story, because her real name's not even Kasumi, and that's a spoiler, too.
Okay.
I need you to play this game. Kasumi rolls up. She's your... what do you call a younger student in anime?
It's not a co...
Whatever, she calls you senpai the entire game.
Right.
And she comes up, she's wants to be an Olympic gymnast. And she specifically does the twirl with the ribbon. And she's really good at it. But she also does dancing and some other stuff. So she's really good at all that. And so she meets you and she wants you to be her personal trainer, like help her, motivate her, because she's been having issues lately. And so that's what you start doing. You're like, hey, you know, yeah. And then by doing that, she teaches you new moves that you're able to use in the Persona world.
I was right. It is a Kohai.
A Kohai?
Yeah, Kohai. So Senpai is for your upperclassmen, mm-hmm. and your underclassmen are called Kohais.
All right. I'll forget that as soon as we're done here. Thank you for, thank you for putting it in my mind. No, maybe I'll...
Right, right.
So Kasumi does this whole thing where she's like dancing with you, kind of, to show you different things. Mm-hmm. And then at the school festival, she gets a special scene if you have already maxed. At that point, you can only get her to 5. Because she has 2 storylines you have to go through. The original game, mm-hmm. which is 5, and then the royal portion that starts only if you have her maxed out and Akechi maxed out, which is super easy. Oh, and the doctor, whose name I forgot, the school counselor guy. He's new as well. Real tragic. He was the voice actor who had cancer and passed away.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that was his last game. And it was Game of the Year nominee content, basically. So she asks you to help her with that, and then you can do that to 5. And if you do, at the school festival, there's a moment where she's kind of like performing a dance. You're dancing in a room, right? It's a whole dance studio. Or it's a dance event. And she starts dancing and catches everyone's attention. Then she goes over to Joker, the main character, grabs his hand, and they start dancing mm-hmm. together. And because she's been showing him how to dance, like it's like this really cool like moment that you only get with her. And it's in the story. It's not part of her specific thing. The game really wants her to be the main love interest. She's the only one who says I love you, and you have to decide at that point, do you love her back or do you say no?
Man,
it's awful. Yeah. And it's so cute because you're teaching her how to make coffee, because she's never done anything like making coffee or like that, and you work at a coffee shop because that's where you ended up, and you're teaching her, and then yeah, she makes coffee and she's like, I made it special, and you're like, wow, it's really good. She's like, because I put love in it, because I think I'm in love with you, senpai. And then you're like, oh crap, what do I say? And for me, I was already gonna pick Makoto, but then I was like, oh, I saw this scene, I'm like, I can't, sorry Makoto. Sorry Makoto. I know, in another life, in another world maybe, but today it's all about Kasumi.
So my number 2 is Nami from One Piece. So I started reading One Piece when I was a teenager, and I like, after we got through like Nami's story arc, dude, I was absolutely smitten with Nami. Like, because talk about like, the fact that I admire characters who have like that willingness to overcome mm-hmm. and that fortitude of mind to push forward even through the darkest times. And Nami went through just arguably like the worst things that a child can go through. And so whenever, you know, like you first meet her, she kind of has this this really untrusting nature towards any pirate, right? And she's really guarded because, you know, in her mind, she's got a burden that she's got to carry on her own.
I mean, she's right about not trusting pirates.
Well, this, you know, in One Piece world, because I feel like we talked about this every
time.
Yeah,
you know,
they're
not really
pirates.
Pirates were awful.
Right. Real pirates were awful. But like in the world of One Piece, you can be a good pirate. You know, like that's a thing that's possible. I guess a lot of it is because, you know, like the world government in the world of One Piece is tyrannical. So like sometimes, you know, being a pirate is the best thing you can do because you're standing up to like somebody who's oppressive. So Nami, you know, like she's really, really guarded. When we first meet her, you know, she tries to sell out her, you know, friends that she makes along the way. So, you know, Luffy, like, you know, but the thing is, you always see like she has like a conscience that she's struggling with, you know, so like as she's, say, for example, trading Luffy to like Buggy the Clown Buggy the Clown. He's a pirate.
Pirate? Pick one, bro.
Yeah, he, pirates in One Piece are themed around things. There's a whole pirate crew that's themed around the mob, you know, like the fire tank pirates, they're all themed against like 1930s gangster movies, you know, it's so funny. So, you know, she's really guarded and, you know, she's not trusting, but you can tell that she's got like something bugging her. Like she can't really bring herself to just be that cold hearted. And whenever we find out like her whole backstory, how, you know, like Arlong, this fishman pirate, which fishmen are a race of people in One Piece, and they're gifted with the fact that they're stronger than humans. So Arlong comes up, you know, out of the Grand Line onto the East Blue, which is just, you know, like just normal people trying to live their lives. But he's a fishman, so he's infinitely stronger. And he comes up with his crew and he whirls up to this island basically saying, hey, I'm in charge now. I'm going to charge you guys a tax to live here. And if you can't afford it, you get out. And it's just kind of like this really heartbreaking story. I could go into like details. I'd be like, this is what made me a fan of One Piece. It was kind of like that thing where, you know, like she has this heartbreaking story where in order to save her village, she kind of takes it on herself. She doesn't tell anyone what she's doing. But she basically decides to join Arlong's group on the condition that she can eventually pay him to buy her island back, you know, to buy her village back from him. That way he can leave forever. And so the whole reason that she's a cat burglar when you first meet her is because she's stealing from pirates with the intention of amassing enough wealth so that she could buy the island back from Arlong. And when obviously, you know, like this is a choice that she made when she was like, what, 10 years old, something like that. So she took him at his word that he was going to honor his end of the deal. And then when you later come to find out that Arlong has the Navy in his pocket, and then he basically like orders a sting on Nami's treasure trove using the Navy. The Navy confiscates all the treasure that she stole. She runs to him and, you know, basically he's like, oh, yeah, well, I guess you can just go ahead and start out from scratch, right? What did we agree on? Like 10,000 berries, and then you can have your... I'm not sure if it was 10,000 berries. It was way more than that. But, you know, like, berries? And then you can have your island back. Yeah, berries is the money in One Piece. So, you know, like 10,000 berries and you can have your island back. Well, I guess you better get started again. You amassed it once. You can amass it twice.
Are you telling me pirates aren't after gold?
It's called berries, but it's money. You know, so like
but pirates and gold, that's in their entire like storyline.
Oh, there's gold too. You know, like there's gold also. Oh, okay, but like, okay, you know, yeah, the unit of money for the entire world,
right,
where the world government
berries,
rules, is berries. Yes. So you know, like when she goes, dude, and she is devastated, right? Because, you know, like she worked for years, you know, like basically stealing from very dangerous people, running away and escaping by the skin of her teeth just to try to save her village. And the entire time the village is treating her like crap because, you know, this is the guy who basically taxes them for a living. And it turns out that, you know, like whenever they killed her mom in front of her, she decided to join them. So everyone just basically turns their back on her. Like, oh, you would sell us out for money? Nami? What the hell? And the only person who knew what she was doing was her sister. And over time, the sister just couldn't take it anymore. So she told the whole village. You know, so she told them, like, no, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, like, you want to know what Nami's doing? You want to know why she joined up with Arlong? It's because she's trying to buy us back from him. That way we can be free. And it's just, like, the whole village is just like, oh, shit, well, we feel like ass. What do we do? And, you know, like, they kind of come to this agreement. I was like, look, to look at her with pity, like, we're going to try to help or do anything. You know, she's just going to tell us no. And it ultimately will be undermining, like, all of the things that she's doing for us. So we just have to pretend we don't know. And whenever Arlong takes all the money from her and she kind of, like, comes back to the village, the villagers aren't having it. Like, they finally, like, raise arms and they're going after Arlong for the first time for themselves, you know, standing up for themselves. And she's basically like, no, look, I did it once. I can do it again. You know, she's basically trying to stop them from marching to their deaths. And, you know, like, they're like, no, you know what? We always knew what you were doing. And we acted like cowards. We basically let you carry the burden. We can't do this again. We, you know, the jig is up. Even if we're marching to our deaths, we're going to take Arlong down. We let you suffer in our name for long enough. And it leads to, like, one of the most iconic scenes in early One Piece, where Luffy shows up and Luffy just being like, he's misunderstood to be like this idiot character, but Luffy reads people like really well. So he's clueless as to what's happening. But he shows up and Nami's basically like, right now, she is so furious at this pirate, Arlong, that she can't stand to think that there's another pirate standing right behind her and that he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's getting involved in things that don't concern him. So she's basically on her knees weeping and she's like kicking sand up at him. And you're like, go away. I don't want you. Go away. You don't understand what's happening. And, you know, like Luffy, again, really good at reading people. So he doesn't move. He just kind of stands there until, you know, like basically her whole tantrum is over. And, you know, then just at a moment of absolute desperation, she turns to him and just, you know, just absolutely devastated, just like, please help me. And so, like, I really admire her for, like, just being like that, just that level of strength on a character, my God. And the fact that she's like the one of the weakest ones on the crew that doesn't really have like a lot of strength behind her, but she has to rely on her wits to kind of like overcome a lot of the time. It's just fantastic, because here she is in a world where power means everything, and she's doing her best to get ahead and to live a life of freedom. And it's actually the subject for what do you call it, the special animation that came out recently, One Piece Fan Letter, which was just an absolute banger of a 30-minute short. But yeah, anyway, Nami, number two, excellent, lover. Time skip design, huge fan.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know nothing about One Piece. I don't really know how to go into the conversation. Sounds pretty standard, secondary main girl in a shonen anime.
Yeah. Anyway, number one.
let me pull up my list. Sorry. you spent more time on just Nami than you did on your last two picks together.
Love Nami, 25, dude.
25 minutes.
She might have been my number almost. One. No kidding.
We're at 1:34 right now. Hour and 34 minutes. We were at an hour when we started your number two. All right. So my number one. Before we reveal this, It's semi what I was feeling when I was a kid, like someone I was really interested in, but also recently became re-infatuated with. And that's Tifa from Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, I love Tifa.
I recently replayed through, well, I just finished the first one again, and I was going to go through the second one when it came out and didn't have the chance to get fully into it. But like, she's just the archetype of character I love. She's a girl who literally kicks butt, but also is like the childhood best friend of the main character, and then tries her best to make sure he stays on track. There's so many moments where Cloud's just kind of like not sure what he's doing, and then Tifa shows up and he realizes what he should be doing. It's really strong in Advent Children.
I was gonna say Advent Children.
Yeah,
it's really noticeable in Advent Children.
Yeah, and he kind of leaves her on the sideline. Like, he clearly likes her and or, like, is in love with her. But then he, for some reason, the creators are like, no, it's definitely, what's her name? Well,
it's definitely Aerith, right? I'm like, I don't know.
No, well, there's a reason for that. Have you finished the games? Like, the original?
I've never even played the games, dude. I know of Final Fantasy VII tangentially because I enjoyed Final Fantasy X. So I kind of, like, read up on it because I wanted to see if other Final Fantasies were as good.
Definitely do not want to spoil Final Fantasy VII. It's definitely one of the highlights of the series.
I know the plot. Like, it's.
So the reason that he's, like, in love with Aerith isn't because he himself is. It's all because
Zach. He's Zach. Yeah.
Yeah. But he definitely was in love with Aerith, or not Aerith, Tifa. And they kind of try to push them both on you in the new games and, like, the remakes. But, like, if you play the originals, you know why this is happening. You know what's going on.
Yeah, never played the originals. I just knew that something Zach, Cloud thinks he's Zach, and Zach was like dating Aerith or something. And
they were a couple.
You're right.
The new games kind of screw with the timeline a ton. That's like the whole point of the games, is they're like rewriting history basically. They're really good. But Tifa herself is just, she's the quintessential video game girl. Everybody's top 10 list of game girls, Tifa's going to be in there somewhere. Maybe not number one.
I feel
one.
Like Tifa... for sure, or maybe Kasumi from, like, Dead or Alive, and what's it called? Lara Croft at some point. Yeah. They're always going to be on those lists.
So pretty much anywhere you go, Tifa's going to be in the top 10, right? She's Tifa. Yeah. She's the quintessential girl next door who hits, like, a truck, but has a soft side, I guess.
And that's so weird to me because, like, you know, anytime that I interact with Final Fantasy VII content, I always feel like Tifa, the way that she presents, right, and Aerith, the way that she presents, I feel like their personality should be switched, you know, but, like, it's so weird that Tifa is, like, the nice girl next door and Aerith is the outgoing girl, you know?
In the original, they were kind of the same, actually. They were both just the girl next door. Just which one did you like better? Brown hair or dark brown hair? I guess she has black hair, really.
I like Tifa more, to be honest.
I liked Aerith a lot in the remake. I thought they did a great job with her characterization and made her way more likable. But yeah, Tifa 100%. The portrayal of Tifa is great in Kingdom Hearts. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
She's portrayed very well. I feel like she's kind of the the punchy girl, you know, like the girl next door punchy girl, is kind of like the archetype for a lot of characters who would go on to be popular in Japanese media.
Very true. Very true.
Very Yor, Sakura. These characters just love to punch things and do lots of damage, but they're like, you know, the best friend or whatever, the main character. Though I guess Sakura specifically isn't into Naruto. She's into Sasuke.
One of my recent favorite rom-coms is about a punchy girl. So I think you're right about that.
Punchy girls. So who's your number one? Let's hear it.
Okay. My number one, I'm going to spend like 60 minutes on this one. So I hope you're prepared. You got need a bathroom break?
I need dinner.
No, I'm just kidding. So like my number one, real easy. It's Marin Kitagawa from My Dress Up Darling.
Oh yeah. No, like, I knew it. The fans probably didn't, but I knew it.
Yeah, you knew it. So, like, the thing is, I love the archetype of the Gyaru with the heart of gold. That's, like, one of my favorite things. And the thing is, I feel like I'm into this more because whenever I was in high school, I was Gojo. Like, you know, like, her love interest in the manga. And so I was kind of, like, the shy person who didn't, like, know how to interact with other people. Like, I really wanted to make connections. But, like, it's kind of one of those things where it's, like, really hard to, like, you know, go to the other side of your shyness. And the thing is, like, this whole manga is a little bit of wish fulfillment because she is so good at bringing him out of his shell. You know, out of, like, pushing him to, like, you know, stand up for himself and to, like, you know, embrace the things you love and, you know, to, like, not be ashamed of being who you are. And it's just such a wonderful thing to read. I don't know if you've ever read the manga, watched the anime, but like
I watched the entirety of the anime. My wife wanted to watch it, and I was like, "All right, yeah, let's sit down and watch it."
It is wholesome as hell. Like, despite the fact that it's a little fan servicey, like there's no denying that it is, but it is wholesome.
It's a weird set of fan service too, where she like was like, "Okay, I'm naked now. Measure me," and he's like, "You're
like I said,
naked in my room," and then when she, like the realization of it happening, to her, it was way more funny than the actual moment itself. But it feels deserved almost.
Right, right. And like I said, you know, like for teenage me, this was almost like wish fulfillment. But like, yeah, so I love the fact that, you know, she is very like herself, you know, like she's unapologetic. She's very, very naturally charismatic. And she kind of has like this mentality that, you know, like, you know, do what you love. And it's such a like really beautiful thing. And I feel like it like particularly resonates it should resonate with like, you know, people in Japan, because, you know, like it's kind of one of those things where it's like you have like this public face that you give to people, you know, like you over there, like being an anime fan is kind of frowned upon, you know, like you're in one of those
it's not quite frowned upon, because it's everywhere. Yeah, like, you walk outside and their ads are anime. People are walking by watching anime wearing clothes and stuff. It's when you're overly obsessed with it
when you're an otaku. Yeah, so I was gonna say there's like a stigma to liking it too much, you know. It's almost like, you know, like you're allowed to drink, you know, like you can have a beer, but if you're an alcohol, if you have too many, it starts to look a little weird. I was gonna say if you're an alcoholic, but obviously all agree that being an alcoholic is a problem. Like
their drinking culture there is kind of wild too, because they force you to drink with your coworkers. It's required almost.
I know it. As far as like my beer example, I was talking about here in the States, but yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it's cool to have a drink with your homies. It's a little weird to get a little too tipsy. You know what I mean? So I feel like Marin is kind of like that person that and I guess alcohol was kind of like a bad example here, but who basically tells you like, you know, like you should enjoy the things you like. You know, in Gojo's example. And I feel like there's a lot of commentary here about gender roles, because his thing is he loves Hina dolls, you know, like which is a traditionally female type of interest, you know, like they're really pretty dolls with really pretty dresses. And, you know, it almost feels to him like, you know, like it's a little embarrassing, you know, because it's like, I like Hina dolls. And
I mean,
he has
is
like
embarrassed
that
by it.
Yeah. And so, he's got that stigma where like the his childhood friend who hasn't come up yet in the manga, which I'm like waiting on. I'm like, that she's going to come back and it's going to be a thing. But anyway, but, you know, she basically like called him out for it and, you know, like kind of like made him embarrassed about it for his whole life. And Marin is almost like the healing he needs, you know, where it's like you need to stop being hung up on like, you know, is this like something that's acceptable in a social sense? And you just need to love what you love. Like, why is that a problem? You know, you like Hina dolls, you like Hina dolls. And
I have a real connection to this story in a way that my wife was pretty embarrassed about like a few of her interests, you know. Like when we first met, she didn't want to cosplay because she did it when she was a teenager, and she looks back on that and she's like cringes about the character she picked and how she did it and stuff. Like old videos and whatnot. And I was like, no, if you love something enough that you can look back on and kind of cringe on it, you can still love it. There's nothing wrong with enjoying what you enjoy. And my wife loves cosplaying now. She cosplays, exactly. she makes her own cosplays. She's basically both characters in one. But she kind of has like a manic pixie girl vibe, where she shows up in the man's life and then helps fix it, basically.
And true.
But in a different way.
And
where she won't leave and ruin it.
Hopefully. For sure. And here's something that I can say as like somebody who's been reading the manga. I really love that, you know, it doesn't stay like that, because it would be one thing if, you know, she was just forever perfect, flawless, you know, like I will always be your perfect goddess, whatever. But in the manga, like whenever we go beyond where the anime ends, Marin is full of insecurities. And it's something that she kind of has to like, you know, especially because the way that she is towards Gojo, where she basically pushes him, you know, to like, hey, you know, do what you love, be who you want to be. But whenever she really starts coming to terms with the fact that, you know, like, oh, man, I'm in love with him and I want to date him. And then suddenly she starts like being almost like a little bit of a hypocrite, because she knows that she wants to make the move. And every time she tries, she just kind of chickens out, you know? So it's like, I can't. And it's like, but you're like rooting for her, because I'm like, this is follow your own advice. You know, like if you love something, go for it. What are you doing? And so it's really, really cute. And, you know, like it's a manga that, you know, like I really, really enjoy, and you know, whenever like I'm telling people what manga I like, it's always like the weird one where I'm like, I love My Dress Up Darling, and people are like, oh,
I mean, weird. You could say Rent a Girlfriend and be even weirder.
Yeah, I could say Rent a Girlfriend and be even weirder. But yeah, like, you know, just long story short, I really, really enjoy, you know, like just her characterization. As far as her being a cosplayer, it just lends itself to like having a bunch of like really banger designs, I feel. And yeah, the artist for this, Shinichi Fukuda, is just like really, really good at like just drawing pretty things, you know, and it's something that like I've actually studied like a lot of like the pages in My Dress Up Darling to better my own art, because the my early like inspirations whenever I was like whenever I was trying to be a comic book artist were Akira Toriyama from Dragon Ball and Kazuki Takahashi from Yu-Gi-Oh. So a lot of my manga is just a bunch of buff dudes and monsters, you know,
with wacky hairstyles.
Yeah, with wacky
hairstyles.
Why
not also just throw, like, you know, maybe, like, at that point, if you're going wacky hairstyles, you should just throw Beyblade in there as well.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, like, because it's typically just, like, muscular dudes and monsters, you know, like, I was like, I really would like to have the ability to draw, like, what I see in this manga. So I kind of, like, studied, like, different, you know, like, designs and stuff like that for the things that he was doing, just to kind of, like, try to, like, better my eye for like drawing, you know, like the more softer, more prettier type of images, you know, like maybe like a little bit like girlier characters and things like that. And so like it's actually led to, because I really love the way that he does his screen toning too, where it's like it's really simple but like really effective, and I dig it. But anyway, so yeah, Marin Kitagawa, like really fun character. I really enjoy like what she represents. I love the archetype of the Gyaru with the heart of gold. And I really like that, you know, as you go on with the story, like she basically is forced to kind of like follow her own advice and to do the thing that she feels the most scared to do, because it's like, is it like the socially acceptable thing to do? Is it like, you know, like what if, like she starts getting in her head with what ifs, and it's like, look, do the thing you love. It's wonderful. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So that's number one for you.
Yeah, Marin, that's my number one.
I knew your list would have at least two of who were in it, so like, no, I immediately really knew you were gonna have Nami in there because you talked about her on a previous episode, and then Marin because you're always talking about Marin, honestly.
It's a good manga, dude, what can I say? But yeah, love both of those. The rest of the list, I mean, I knew I was gonna have Yor, but like I was gonna have Shion too. And then when I realized that Yor and Shion are just, like, kind of the same character in different manga, I was like, oh, okay, well, like, we're just going to make this a twofer, because I couldn't decide which one I like best. Yor ultimately felt like just, like, the good choice. But anyway. And then as far as, like, the last two were just kind of, like, last minute, like, where I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like I definitely should mention Edelgard, because I loved Edelgard. It's a toss up between Edelgard and Dorothea. It's like, it's so close. Like, if you had given me two more minutes, I would have chosen Dorothea. And Nicole is a new one, but I really enjoy her character in Zenless Zone Zero. So, you know, just kind of like, eh.
Yeah. For me, I kind of leaned back into when I was younger, like who I enjoyed. Cause like four of these are when I was a child, basically. Hinata, Mei, Yin, I wasn't a child, but, I was basically a child. I think I was 18 when I watched this show. 19? 19. I was 19. The year I got back into anime. And then Tifa, again, also, I was in love with her as a kid. Makoto and Kasumi are like the newer ones. 2016, I don't remember how old I was, but I was an adult by then. I was in the military, and I finally got hold of a PS4.
Mm-hmm.
And played the crap out of Persona 5. Honorable mention, okay. Naoto from Persona 4. Also a great choice.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's really, really good choice. Yeah. I don't know who that is, but I agree with
you. I'm making Bard play Persona, all of them. Yes.
Honorable mention, Mercy from Overwatch.
You know, really love Mercy's Mercy. Pretty good. My hair from Overwatch is definitely probably D.Va. No, not anymore, it isn't. Yukiko.
Whom?
The new girl.
Juno?
What's her name? Juno, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, okay. I was like, whom? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what... No. I only know her by call sign. I don't know who she is otherwise. But yeah, that wraps up our episode on our top five waifus. Do you agree with our choices? Do you not? Please let us know in the comment section below. Just another reminder. Recently, I've started working on a Patreon. I will post a link whenever it's finally up and running. If you are interested to hear these episodes unedited, because you who are listening are probably getting the short version. There are versions of these episodes where we go on longer rants and we talk about things beyond our normal subject. You can find it on our Patreon. I'm just looking for a place to put these so that, you know, the episodes aren't so bloated, so that they're more streamlined. But if you are interested in hearing our takes in other things, you know, you're more than welcome to stop by. We have our episode for Itchy the Witch is a perfect example of this, because not only did we talk about Itchy the Witch, we talked about video games we were playing. We talked about the hero's journey in writing. We talked about so much stuff that didn't make it to that episode. So if you're interested in just, you know, hearing longer episodes where we talk about more stuff, Patreon, check it out, you know. Other than that, thank you for joining us. I have been the Midnight Bard. This has been Sacro.
Bye-bye, friends.
Adios!